you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Previously on Insight.
It was a devastating feeling. I felt like I was lied to.
22 women are suing a San Diego-based porn company and its owners, alleging that they were manipulated or tricked into performing in videos, all under false pretenses.
The big lie is that it's going to be put on DVDs, it's going to be shipped offshore to Australia, or it's going to be shipped to a collector, and that it's not going to be seen on the internet. That's the big lie.
In many cases, some of the girls were as young as 17 when they actually signed and agreed to come to San Diego.
I was getting a text from multiple people saying, make her go viral, and it was a GIF of myself.
The sole owner is a man named Michael Pratt. He's got the chief videographer, also owns part of another website, Matthew Wolf. And then there's the lead actor or recruiter. His name is Andre Garcia.
So Dorian, at this point, where do things stand? Where are we at?
So we're gearing up for trial, for a civil trial in the case of the 22 women versus Girls Do Porn.
From the NBC7 studio in San Diego, this is Insight, a podcast that dives behind the stories making headlines in our community. In this episode...
I believe that, in some way, I was raped. I feel like I wanted to leave the room, and I wanted to stop, and they told me just to take a break.
That's testimony from a woman who worked for the three men behind a San Diego porn company and website. It's part of a civil trial involving 22 women who say those men used an elaborate scheme to convince them to appear in a sex video.
It was a challenge to kind of clear my name or to get anybody to believe me.
The civil trial is now underway here in San Diego, and it's getting international attention. And meanwhile, the owner of the company has vanished.
I've never had this happen before.
It's not really unusual in this case to have some of the parties not here in court.
Since the beginning of the trial, we have heard from former employees who admitted to lying, emails from the owner to potential models promising them the videos would not go online, and from several women who say their lives were ruined, one even claiming the male actor raped her when she told him to stop. I'm Mari Payton.
And I'm Dorian Hargrove with NBC7 Investigates.
So Dorian, I know you've been looking into this for a really long time, this issue, and finally it's in trial. What were you thinking? What were you hoping to learn?
Well, you know, I think more than anything, it's putting faces and people to a whole bunch of documents, right? So over the last 3 years, it's been reading declarations or depositions. And, you know, while everyone had some similar stories, you actually see, you know, these people explaining what happened to them, how it happened. You see all the players, other than the owners, obviously, and the defendants. However, you see the plaintiffs, you see the Jane Does, you see the reference women, the women who were paid to lie, or that's what they testified to. And this is all in person. So, you know, I mean, it was interesting to me, obviously, following it, but I think it made everything way more personal and real, I guess, in a way.
NBC7 News at 4 starts now.
Tonight, new details are emerging about a San Diego-based porn company at the center of an alleged scheme.
NBC7 Investigates reporter Mari Payton is outside the courthouse where a civil trial over these allegations started today. Mari.
Well, Mark, Catherine, this is the day that these 22 women have been waiting for years now.
So it's the first day of the trial. Describe the setting, sort of the mood in the courtroom that day.
It was interesting because I think there were, you know, more journalists in the room than anyone else, right? I mean, there was no jury. It's a bench trial, so the judge is the person that's presiding over the trial and will decide in the end. So it was the attorneys for the defendants, attorneys for the plaintiffs.
To this day, Many endure harassment, bullying, proposition for sex.
So Ed Chapin, who represents the 22 women who are suing, he started his opening statement.
Our goal, as I said, was to ensure that no other women have to endure what these women have been through. We want them shut down.
Yeah, and you know, as far as the opening statement went, I think it was all stuff that you and I had known about, Mari, that we had covered. So that didn't really reveal much, and I don't think that anyone really expected it to. I think the biggest thing is to know, like, okay, now here we're going to find all the cards on the table. Everything's going to come out. So it wasn't really so much of what was said, because we know what the allegations are. But it was more of, here we go. Now we're going to find out a lot more and, you know, stay tuned.
Attorney Aaron Sadock represents the owners of this website, Girls Do Porn, and he does his opening statements as well.
Yeah, and same goes for the plaintiff side. They hammer home the fact that these women all signed a contract. They all flew out to San Diego knowing it was going to be an adult film or having sex on video. So that's their defense. That's where they're at.
No one forced them to go on that flight and travel to another city to do an adult film. No one put them under duress and forced them to sign the contracts, to make these statements, or ultimately have sex on camera.
They also said that the women, obviously, even if any misrepresentations or maybe not all the information was given about where the videos would go, that it's very, very easy for people to post videos online if that was their only concern. So, I mean, I think that they just try to attack the credibility of the women and what their claims were, and that's what he did.
Overwhelming evidence to show that these were adult women who chose to do an adult film with a legitimate business.
Let's talk about the women, the alleged victims in this case. And so far, what have we learned through the process?
Yeah, so I think, they all have similar stories, just like the women that we spoke to independently. However, in these cases in particular, I think it shows or their testimony showed just the level and the scope of what this operation was. In the case of Jane Doe 15, it was very compelling testimony. I mean, she had emails, she had text messages, all from the owner of the website, Michael Pratt.
And in court, Jane Doe 15, she showed text messages and there were emails that she had with Pratt. And we can see repeatedly, she says she was only interested in doing just regular full-clothed modeling shoots. Something to be aware of, the judge decided that the media could only record opening statements from attorneys on both sides, but we weren't allowed to tape the women or any of the witnesses, so we had someone else read the following transcripts.
I mean, I read the, but I wasn't seriously considering it because I was not interested in doing pornography. I wanted to hear more about clothed modeling that he mentioned only in the second email.
And another interesting part was to hear how many times that man she identified as Michael Pratt told her that if she did this video, it would only go to private collectors in Australia. Again, that was evidence seen in emails and text exhibits in court.
Yeah, and it was also, items that we haven't seen in other motions that have been filed. So this is all new to us, at least to the level of the amount of times and the amount of emails that Pratt would have or sent saying, hey, this is the agreement, this is the situation. And it kind of shows you how some of these women, where their thought process was, because I think that's been what's missing in this whole story is, hey, they agreed, right? They say that they were groomed, but, now we're starting to see just how elaborate of a method that they used.
There was also testimony from a woman, Jane Doe 4, and she was obviously very emotional during her testimony. She cried several times on the stand, but also during filming, she said she had asked to stop the shoot several times.
I believe that in some way, I was raped. I feel like I wanted to leave the room and I wanted to stop. And they told me just to take a break.
So those were some serious allegations. What else did we find out about her?
Well, you know, as was the case with the women we spoke to, as well as Jane Doe 15, who had testified previously, they all say that they were provided or offered drugs and alcohol before the shoots. But in Jane Doe 4's situation, her video eventually, when it was released, got in the hands of all of her, or I guess a large number of classmates at a university in Arizona. And she said that she was harassed repeatedly. She'd be in an elevator. Someone called her porno girl. She'd walk down the campus and the same thing happened. So she eventually dropped out. And what was interesting with her is she actually went on Craigslist later to try to warn, you know, or she said, try to warn other women about what happened. And she received a letter from the attorney for the company, Aaron Sadock, not long after.
He sent me a cease and desist order along, attached with my nude pictures, saying that I can't post what I posted on Craigslist.
A little more than 3 weeks into the trial, Dorian, I remember you telling us that there was a major development and pretty surprising.
Yeah, it came as a shocker. So, you know, the plaintiff's attorneys are scheduling the witnesses. And then we hear that the owner, Michael Pratt, has gone missing, right? So his attorney said that he's out of the country and they don't know where he is at the point when they informed the opposing attorneys, the plaintiff's attorneys. And so it came as a big shocker because he's got an under court order to appear to testify.
So when this was announced in court, Dorian, what was the reaction of everyone in court?
When it came to the plaintiff's attorneys, Ed Chapin, who's been practicing law for like 40 years, he put it pretty bluntly.
I've never had this happen before. Been informed that he is no longer in the jurisdiction. He's not available to come testify when we had him served with a notice to appear, which is a court order, commanding his appearance to testify live here in court. And we're going to be running it to ground and asking the court for whatever relief we can get.
And when it comes to the defense attorneys, I thought it was really interesting. We interviewed not the lead, but the associate attorney, Daniel Kaplan. And he said that, you know, hey, trial's been going on for 3 years now. Everyone has their lives to lead. And this is just, you know, essentially a thing that Michael Pratt, his client, decided to do.
Obviously, well, and also he was from New Zealand, so he would travel back and forth. So oftentimes or sometimes he wouldn't even be in the country. So it wasn't that unusual.
And that's exactly what he said.
Mr. Pratt is from New Zealand. He's actually not from California, so it's not unusual if he leaves the country. It is all systems go for the defense. We are still going to be defending Mr. Pratt and the other defendants. It's not really unusual in this case to have some of the parties not here in court. It doesn't mean that they're not either pursuing their case or defending themselves.
He was a bit vague about where he was. I mean, that didn't come up. So it wasn't like, oh, he went back to his, you know, his home country of New Zealand. But, you know, that's what he said, that he's not a native, you know, from the States, and he has a right to leave. But it goes back to the bigger argument of if you're in a court order to appear, you appear. That his attorneys also said that he'd be willing to do a video to testify under video or on video. And the plaintiff's attorneys aren't having it.
Anything else noteworthy happen in the trial?
So we heard a lot from the different plaintiffs. I think, you know, in one of which was 17 when she signed up, sent nude pictures when she was 17, and that's what she testified to, which you would think would be a major red flag. So that came out during trial. The other big one was Val Moser, which was essentially the manager, I guess you could say, bookkeeper, manager. She did everything from pick up the women to and from the airport, took them to get hair, nails done, and everything else. And she was very straightforward. She said, you know, she knowingly lied. She would tell them that, tell the women that the videos would not go anywhere. She had heard Michael Pratt lie to women on what they called sales calls in order to entice the women to come out. And those lies were all the same. They were all that, you know, the videos would not go online. They'd go to private collectors in Australia. And you know, so I that's all been verified by them, by the people that actually work there. And I think that's a big part in this. But again, the defense will come back and say the women signed a contract.
Has tremendously affected my life, and I don't want to see another young girl fall into victim of any of this. It's horrible. It's something that I wouldn't wish upon my worst enemy. It definitely creates a lot of psychological issues when you go through something like this, and I just want to make sure that this doesn't happen to anybody else.
So after we posted this original podcast, there was a major development in court. So we wanted to come back and get everyone up to speed. Paul Krueger, senior investigative producer, was in court today. Paul, what happened?
It was quite a surprise. We'd been hearing all morning that something big was going to happen in this case. And there was rumors of an arrest or something like that. But the lawyers wouldn't talk with me. They said they were sworn to silence. After the lunch break, it was a lawyer for the defense that told the judge that his clients had been arrested. And boy, you could feel it in the courtroom. There was just a real sense of shock and disbelief. So just a couple minutes later, everybody involved walked over to federal court where the co-owner of Girls Do Porn, Matthew Wolf, and producer and male performer Ruben Andre Garcia were brought into the courtroom in leg chains and handcuffs. They were formally charged with conspiracy in sexual trafficking and sexual trafficking by force, fear, or coercion.
This came as a surprise, right? Because everyone was preparing for the civil trial. Why today? Why did the arrest come today? Can you talk about that?
I can tell you that the lawyers for the female victims told us this has been under investigation for a long time. And we know from our experience with criminal cases that the FBI, which in this case was doing the investigation, probably spent at least a year putting together this criminal case. It's clear from looking through the 26-page indictment that they got a lot of their information from the civil case that we've been covering. That is, they reviewed the depositions where the woman talked about how they'd been lied to and coerced about where these videos would end up. But they had some pretty astounding new allegations too, including the alleged rape of one of the female victims by the performer Ruben Andre Garcia. So that's what we learned today, that it probably been under investigation a long time. And I think when it comes to why today, it's just a matter of timing. It's however long it takes prosecutors to review all the investigation from the FBI and file the case.
One of the owners, though, it seems as if he's fled the country and he might be in his home country of New Zealand. What happens now in the federal case against him?
Well, we learned in the civil case that, and we've reported that for you, that Michael Pratt left the San Diego area via Tijuana and flew back to New Zealand about 6 weeks ago, sometime before the trial started. And we also learned recently that he's apparently still there. Now, he's considered a fugitive. He's charged in this criminal case. The prosecutors say he's a fugitive, and the marshal, the U.S. marshal, has the job of trying to round up criminal defendants who are who have fled in the country or in foreign countries. And I imagine what happens now is if they know where he is, they've got to get a court order to go and get him. And then we have to find out if New Zealand allows him to be extradited.
What about Matthew Wolf and Andre Garcia? They're being held now without bail. Why was that decision made?
Yes, prosecutors often will ask a magistrate to keep defendants in prison because they're a danger to the community and a flight risk. We hear that all the time. Today, there was a third allegation made by prosecutors that I haven't heard in all the time I've been covering federal court, which is that prosecutors believe that Wolf and Garcia could make an attempt to intimidate witnesses in this case against them, and that would be the women, that they would continue to do what they've allegedly done throughout this whole, what prosecutors called scheme, which is threaten the women with more negative publicity, threaten to send pictures of them to their families and friends, and most harmful probably to continue posting these videos on websites.
There was also a fourth person, Val Moser, who was charged today. Is that correct? And she was an administrative assistant from what I understand, or that's what they're calling her.
Yeah, this was another interesting development today. She managed to find out about the charges and turned herself in. She showed up at the courtroom before they could arrest her, or she got her attorney to get word to the FBI that she would turn herself in. So she appeared in court today, and the judge actually let her go on her own recognizance.
Valerie, do you have anything to comment?
We got video of her coming out of the courtroom. She's going to be back next week. Now, she faces just one count, one criminal count. The three men face four criminal counts. Val Moser, who was an administrative assistant and picked up the girls at the airport, and I believe also allegedly assured them that these performances would never appear on the internet. She's charged in the conspiracy to commit a sex trafficking charge, but not the actual sex trafficking.
So moving forward, does the civil case move simultaneously with the federal case? How is that going to work?
This will be a dispute that we'll hear next week. The defense, the lawyer for the men who own the website, asked the judge today to immediately suspend the civil case because they said Matthew Wolf has the right to be in court when a case against him is being heard. And that because he's in custody, the judge has to stop the civil case. The lawyers for the women strongly disagreed and said Wolf has given his permission not to be in court. He's only been in court when he testified. We haven't seen him in the audience or listening to the proceedings any other time. So the attorney for the women said, Wolf doesn't need to be here. We do not want under any circumstances this trial to be delayed or suspended. So the judge said he'll hear arguments next week on whether or not the civil case will continue.
Well, I was glad to see that the wheels of justice are grinding away because they perpetrated some pretty serious crimes and have ruined the lives of some very delightful young women. And I'm glad to see them having to pay for it on the criminal side.
We talked with the attorneys outside the courtroom, and essentially they told us it's about time. They told us they hope that the criminal charges provide some measure of closure and satisfaction for the women they represent. Also, these are significant charges. If they're found guilty of the conspiracy to commit sex trafficking, the penalty is life, up to life in prison, which is pretty astounding. I always tell my colleagues, don't pay attention to that because it never happens. Generally, these cases are settled by a plea in which the defendants agree to plead guilty and they're sentenced generally to a pretty moderate sentence of a couple years. And in this case, there might be significant financial penalties.
You have to assume that those 22 women that filed the civil lawsuit, they're pretty happy with the developments today.
Absolutely. I can imagine they would have really liked to be in court today and seen these two men struggling to walk with these leg chains on and looking very nervous and concerned about their future when they were sitting in the dock waiting for the hearing to start. We learned today another new, very interesting fact about this website. We'd heard that it was generating millions of dollars in profit for these owners, but today prosecutors say that these men made $17 million off these websites and off these videos that these women unwittingly appeared in.
Okay, Paul Krueger, thanks for joining us. To learn more about this case, go back to episode 2 of Insight Behind a San Diego Porn Scheme. You can also go to NBC7.com and search Porn Scheme. Insight is a new project for us, so if you like what you're hearing, we could really use your support. Remember to subscribe to Insight. You can find it by searching Insight NBC in iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Play, and leave us a review. That's how we can continue providing this insight into our investigations. Thanks for listening.